Okay, let's chant 49. Asakta bhuti sarvatra jitatma vigatas praha naishkarmya siddhim paramam sanyasyan yadigachati. For one who is self-controlled and attached and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. So this is a further development of naishkarmya, or freedom from reaction. And this is describing the second level of sannyas, which was described in 2.17, yastvatma ratir eva syat. Right? This verse. And also it was described in 6.3, yoga rudhasya tenaiva shama karana uchite. So now again, this point has come. The first level of sannyas is renouncing the fruits of work and the defects of the work, which is the idea, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the doer. Once a person is able to do that, then he quickly makes advancement. And then he can actually renounce the work itself. So that's described here. That's called Gyanamarg. When someone comes to that level of purity and sense control, mind control, and detachment, then he doesn't have to perform any of the prescribed duties. And it was said in that same verse in chapter 2 that kuryat navidyate, something like this. He doesn't have to perform this duties. 2.17, or no, I'm sorry, 2.19. Yes, that's right. But which verse is it?
3.17.
Oh, that's right, 3.17. Right number text, wrong number chapter. Tasya karyam na vidyate. Right, so the person is, he has no duty to perform. So Krishna mentioned it at that point in chapter 3. And he mentioned it in chapter 6. Now he's also describing. So here's the description. Asakta bhudi. Sarvatra. So his intelligence is unattached to the material objects, the sense objects. And jitatma, he's controlled the mind. And vigatasparha, he's without material desires, even the happiness of going to Brahmaloka. Well, why is he so detached? Because his attachment is to his self, his atma. He's transferred his attachment to spiritual attachment, basically. So therefore, naishkarmya siddhim paramam. He attains the supreme perfection of renunciation and freedom from reaction. Sanyasenadi gacchati. So he attains the renounced order. Someone in Gyanamarg, he doesn't even bother for his bodily maintenance. He's completely detached from his body. It's like a avaduta. Something on a high level. So here in this section, Krishna is going to be describing more about Gyanamarg and probably more details than he has mentioned previously. Oh, the same principles are found like in chapter 6 or even in chapter 5 when he's describing the Nishkam Karma Yoga and Yogi, how he goes through the Gyana stage, the Gyanishta. So it's the same thing actually. And actually we see that He just finished describing the varnashram duties, and he said that one should perform one's nitya karma in varnashram dharma, and then offer that to the Lord. So either in sakam or nishkam. So he's offering this in nishkam. He comes to jnana level. So in jnana, he develops this knowledge of the self, of the atma. He's atma rati or atma triptas. He's completely self-satisfied from within. That's why he's able to be vigatas piha, jitatma, and this asakta buddhi. He's not attracted to the sense objects anymore, because he's enlightened within, illumined within, active within. Right? That was described in chapter 5. It's the same level, actually. But from chapter 5, Krishna went right into Ashtanga Yoga, if you remember, at the end. But now he's going to talk about Jnana Marga, which is basically, because Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, they're both inactive yoga systems. Ultimately, the person's coming to Krishna. But there's three ways to come to Krishna. Through Brahma Nishtha, and then the karma and jnana manifest. Through Ishwara Nishtha, and there's surrendering one's activities to Ishwara within the heart, the Antaryami, and then Bhagavan Nishtha, and then one develops pure devotion right away. So his path is just surrendering to, you know, to the sweet form of Krishna, hearing and chanting about the sweet form of Bhagavan. So there's three ways to come to bhakti, and this is like describing going through Brahma Nishtha. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that karma becomes defective when, due to false ego, someone considers himself the doer and desires the fruits of that activity. The first stage of sannyasa is to give up these defects and remain engaged in karma. Gradually, when the sadhana of such a sannyasi matures, he becomes firmly situated in yoga, yoga rudha, same level as the Ashtanga yogis. He may completely renounce all karma at that stage, right, when it comes to yoga rudha. What was it for the Ashtanga yogi? When can he completely give up his nishkam karma? According to the Ashtanga levels? Yeah, when it comes to jnana. So this is similar to the jnani. He attains a similar level. He's not doing pranayama and asanas and all these, but he comes to the same level of spiritualization. So that's called yoga rudha. So then, at that point, he can renounce all his karma. Now, Krishna also describes that to when the bhakti yogi can do that, when he becomes very much attached to hearing and chanting my glories, my pastimes. Right? Tavat karmani, something, I forget. At that time, he can give this all these things up. So this is talking about like ruchi asakti. When a person comes to asakti, he's attached to hearing about Krishna. So for a Vaishnavas in bhakti marg, then this yoga rudha is found at asakti. His mind is completely attached to Krishna. And then he doesn't have to care at all about anything about varnashram. He may still perform some varnashram duties to set an example for others, but he doesn't have to. So you can find this level in jnana, in yoga, and in bhakti. That's why all of these levels, they all have similar lakshanas or symptoms. If you study these systems, you'll see that they're basically the same. They just have different approaches. Prabhupada writes here that at the end of his purport, a sannyasi is supposed to be free from the reactions of his past activities, But a person who is in Krishna consciousness automatically attains this perfection without even accepting the so-called order of sannyas. This state of mind is called Yoga Rudha, or the perfectional stage of yoga. This is confirmed in the third chapter, Yastvatma Ratir Eva Syat. One who is satisfied in himself has no fear of any kind of reaction from his activity. Prabhupada knows very well all of these things we're talking about. It's just that he doesn't try to overburden the reader who is Westerner, mainly. And even Indian people, too. They can't be bothered with all of these different levels and Sanskrit terminology and cross-referencing different verses. It's just like a big headache. So he wrote the commentaries very simply, but you can see that he knows exactly what's happening here in the commentary. Because he's also using the commentaries of the Acharyas to write his tikkas here. But he simplified it somewhat without all of the terminology. Okay, now 50. Siddhim prapto yata brahma tatapnoti nibhodame samasenaiva kuntaya nishta gyanasya vyapara. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge by acting the way I shall now summarize. So actually the question was raised, all right, he may be free from defects, but he has not yet achieved Brahman, so what is the use of this? So then the Lord says, now hear from me how he attains and realizes Brahman. In text 50. So you can see, nishta gyanasya yat para. He attains his transcendence, which is called jnana nishta. Nishta, according to Amara Kosha, means completion, the end of something, or destruction of something. Prabhupada comments, the Lord describes for Arjuna how one can achieve the highest perfectional stage simply by being engaged in his occupational duty, performing that duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One attains that supreme stage of Brahman simply by renouncing the result of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Right? So it seems almost contradictory. Right? Someone can attain Brahman in Ganamarg by doing his work and offering it to the Supreme Lord. You got Bhagavan, you got Brahma, right? But as we said, you can approach bhakti through Brahmanishta or Jnananishta. Either you can do Nishkam Karma and then get knowledge, and that with that knowledge, with renunciation and everything, and within that knowledge, then gradually nirgun bhakti will come. So in that case, later Krishna will give Arjuna some choice. Listen carefully, then you do whatever you like to do, right? Tatejasi tatakuru. So he's giving him some choice about which path he would like to do. So if he wants to approach through Brahmanishta, then he can consider his work Nishkam Karma and then come to bhakti through Jnana Marg. Or if he wants to surrender to the Super Soul, which is Guhyatar, more confidential, then he can do his occupational duty and offer it to the Lord in his heart. The Lord who has prompted him in his swabhava of being a kshatriya. Or he can come to the Lord through Bhagavad Nishta. He can just do bhakti and just sarvadharma and pradyaja. Forget all about jnana, nishkam karma, forget about ashtanga, about yoga, like this. So that's what Krishna is talking about at the end of the Gita. So you can see, because otherwise you think, well, this is, right, this is talking about Ganamarg, and Prabhupada says he can achieve the highest perfectional stage through his occupational duty, performing that duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one attains that supreme stage of Brahman simply by renouncing the result of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. When someone performs bhakti, then he also comes to Brahma-bhuta, and he gets all the symptoms which are described in this, you know, asakta buddhi, jitatma, vigata, spriha. He gets all of those. Ultimately, yoga means bhakti yoga. And the other yogas are just steps towards bhakti. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, when ignorance subsides, jnana is gradually superseded by vijnana. When jnana is completely relinquished, Brahma will be realized. So that's the vijnana, Brahma. As we said, the jnani has to gradually renounce even his knowledge to come to Brahma-bhuta. That will come in the Brahma-bhuta shloka. Okay. 51-53. Buddhya vishuddhaya yukto dhrityatmanam niyamyacha shabdadin vishayangschakva raga dvesha vyudasyacha vivikta seve lagvashi yata vakarmanasaha dhyana yoga paro nityam vairagyam samupashritaha ahamkaram balam darpam kamam krodham parigraham vimucha nilmama shanto brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. So probably this is the most detailed description of Jnana Marga, Jnana Yoga. Like, you don't see anything, you know, priti or prapadyate, prema, bhava, asakti. You know, you don't see any verses or any words that have to do with love, sneha, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, prema, right? In these verses. Or even archan, arpan. Nothing about bhakti at all. It's just all about detachment and controlling the mind and senses. Becoming free from attachment and hatred. So Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, that's the bottom line. It means capable of realizing Brahman. And here, balam doesn't mean strength or ability, but it means attachment to kama, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Balam does not mean strength or ability, but it means kama. Yeah. Anyway, that's what he wrote. Yeah. Attachment to kama. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written, after giving up false ego and material desires, they become qualified to realize Brahman. This is called cessation of ignorance. In such a state, even sattva gun becomes quieted and subdued. This alone is called renunciation of jnana. This alone is called renunciation of jnana. One cannot realize Brahman without renouncing ajnana and jnana. Jnana and ajnana. Huh? Yeah, he reaches vijnana and he gives up jnana. He realizes Brahman. But before he has to give up the jnana. Because the jnana is in sattva gun, and Brahma is nirguna. Prabhupada writes, thus, when he is completely free from false ego, he becomes non-attached to all material things, and that is the stage of self-realization of Brahman. This stage is called the Brahma-Buddha stage. When one is free from the material conception of life, he becomes peaceful and cannot be agitated. This is described in 270. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apapravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashantam apnoti nakama kami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So this verse is dealing with Gyanamarg. Baladeva Vidyapushan says he becomes peaceful like an ocean without waves. You can imagine such a thing. He also says, just wait till we finish then. He becomes Dhyana Yoga Para and meditates on Hari. He renounces everything that is not transcendental. He gives up anything that increases bodily consciousness. He meditates on Hari. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also mentioned about thinking about Bhagavan in this verse. It's Dhyana Yoga Para. He mentioned something like this. He's meditating on Bhagavan. Or he can be meditating on Bhagavan too. Now we will look at Bhagavatam, the Uddhava Gita, 11:19:1. Oh, where's part two? You have to. Oh God, where's Raghavendra? Oh, can you get the other book, please? We only have part one. Part two is the main book we need. But you have to run quickly. Fly there and fly back. Because we're just sitting here waiting for you to come. Hope he doesn't fall down. Ghost. But once the ghost is gone, then the gems and the mantras and the herbs are not needed. Right? And Jiva Goswami describes when the king issues weapons to the citizens for the war. But then after the war, the citizens give back the weapons. They don't need them. Right? So the idea is that, let's see here, knowledge of the temporary nature of the world counteracts ignorance. And there are many scriptures that train the jiva in such knowledge. Gradually, one gives up his false identification with the material body and mind, and with those material objects that interact with the body and mind. Having realized such counteractive knowledge, one must engage in loving service to the Lord. So then he gives up those things. So the word vidya here is talking about knowledge acquired through philosophical analysis, mystic yoga, austerities, and renunciation. So these things also, the knowledge acquired from them and those things as a means to get the knowledge should be renounced because they have no application, any further application. When one realizes Brahman, then he gives this up. So that's confirmed by Krishna in Uddhava Gita. Brahma bhuta prasanatma na shocchati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So it's a further description of this Brahma-Bhuta platform. Prasanna-atma. He's very joyful. And he doesn't lament or hanker for anything because he is detached from the sense objects. And sama means he has equal vision, like that of a child. Sarva bhuteshu, in all living entities, both good and bad. And mad bhaktim labhate pranam. This is the important pada of this verse, that he attains my transcendental bhakti. So param indicates that Krishna is saying my bhakti is separate and better than jnana. Because para means something other than, or something separate, and also it indicates that it's superior. And because it's separate from both nishkam karma and jnana, it is kevala, or pure. So here, the idea is that nitya siddha Krishna prema sadyukabo noi. Like this, that love for Krishna is eternally situated in the hearts of all living beings, even in the heart of the jnani. Or the person who's in Brahma Nishtha, he's maybe doing nishkam karma, going through the jnana stage, and like this, approaching the Lord in that way to try to get to bhakti. So, in his heart, there's love for Krishna. And although it was partially manifest in his knowledge, but it was not fully manifest, nor was it really perceivable by him or by anyone. So the bhakti was already partly active, but it was not clearly perceivable. So, but by coming to a platform of such high level of purity, then there's like nothing left. There's no modes of nature. There's no attachment to the sense objects. He's even given up his sattva gun jnana, his motive knowledge from the mode of goodness. And he's just like a mirror. And so there's some bhakti there in the heart, and that reflects, and then he attains bhakti in this way. So the examples are like, the bhakti is there in the heart, just like the super soul is in the heart, but you cannot perceive the super soul so easily. But it takes some effort, some purification. Similarly, fire is situated within wood, And the fire will manifest only when there's a certain amount of heat. The wood will burst into flames. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of like a bowl of gems, a bowl of dal. Say you have like chana dal or something, ur dal, and you have one golden jewel, a gem, right? So you throw that, you know, and you grind that, put it in a grinder, and it crushes all of the dal, but the jewel remains as outstanding. So the bhakti is like this. The jewel is considered to be relatively imperishable when you compare it to the dal. Right? Dal or grains. Chana dal or ur dal or something. So the bhakti is like this jewel, it's imperishable. And so once all the modes are gone, once the sattva gun jnana is gone, and any other things gone from the heart, then this bhakti remains. That's why Krishna says, mad bhaktim labhate param, that he achieves bhakti. It kind of manifests. Otherwise, he would have said, mad bhaktim kurute param, that he makes bhakti by his, you know, efforts. But it's there, and it manifests. And Rupa Goswami says a similar thing in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavas asarana vida nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam riddhi sadhyata. That the love of Krishna, bhava, is in the heart, Nityasiddhasya bhavasya prakaktyam. It becomes manifest. Riddhi sadhyata. Right? By practicing bhakti sadhana, that love in the heart is uncovered. So similarly, one can perform this and one can become purified, and that love in the heart can also be revealed. So Prabhupada writes, to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one has to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. So if one is going through this path, but his goal is to surrender to the Lord, right? So then his desire will be fulfilled. And then he'll get nirgun bhakti. He can get it through jnana marga, actually. This is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary to these verses here. He gives his own example. He says, he's just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Next verse. So someone might ask that, what is the result of attaining bhakti to you? So Krishna answers in text 55. Bhaktya mam avijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvatah tato mam tatvato gyatva vishyate taranantaram. One can understand me as I am. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me, by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So, in this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that there's four kinds of jnanis. So the first one is a person who feels that he will attain sayujya just through jnana marga, that he doesn't need to do any bhakti. The second jnani, he realizes he needs to do some bhakti to attain his goal of sayujya. So he does some bhakti. What exactly he does is maybe up for question, how he does it. Maybe he does some deity worship, maybe he chants the holy name. But Brahmavadis sometimes do different angas of bhakti. But the problem with this person is that he thinks that the form of the Lord is made of material energy, that is sattva gun, morti. Like Ramachandra or Krishna, like this, that they come to the world and they think that they, you know, Brahman is the supreme, ultimate form of the absolute truth, and that this is the form of Ram and Krishna are just temporary material manifestations made from sattva gun. So both of these kind of jnanis are offensive, and therefore they never achieve sayujya mukti. They simply revolve in the cycle of birth and death again and again. Then the third kind of jnani, he realizes that he needs to do some bhakti in order to attain Brahman or sayujya. And he does bhakti, and he accepts that Krishna and Ram are actually Brahman, like a manifestation of Brahman. But he considers that Brahman is a higher manifestation, or the original manifestation. Just like if any of us saw Lord Vishnu, we would immediately bow down. But at the same time, we would know that Krishna is the origin of all forms of Vishnu and Narayan, right? And we'd be more interested in meeting Krishna, just like the gopis, something like this. I mean, at least ultimately, we would be like that. So similarly, these Brahmavadis, they bow down to Krishna and Ram as manifestations of their beloved Brahman. You know? So they're not offensive, but they're just not interested in serving in Premamayi Bhakti. They just want to merge them. They want Brahma Sayujya. So by the mercy of Bhakti Devi, they're allowed to merge into the Brahman, Brahma Jyoti. And then the fourth, now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this person is honorable or can be honored. I forget exactly the words he used, but maybe he's like, he can be glorified, he can be honored. Some credence, some validity is given to such a person. This third one. Then the fourth one is most glorious. Now he's a person that realizes he needs to do bhakti, and he accepts the Lord's form as eternal, and somehow he, by the association of some great mahatma, he gets converted, so to speak. Then he's sent on to the pure bhakti path. And he gives example of, he gives the, quotes the verse, Atma Ramas Chamunayo, Nigrante Aparukrame, Kurvate Haitakim Bhaktim, Itam Bhuta Ganohari. Right, the Atma Ramas, they can become attracted to the qualities of Lord Hari, and then they can become devotees. That's how someone can approach Bhagavan through Gyanamarg. Because we see Shukadev did it, Kumaras did it, right, like this. That's the meaning. It means ultimately they become devotees from the platform of Brahma Marg, or Jnana Marg, or Brahmavadi. So I'll read a little bit from the Gita Bhushan. What happens after is explained in this verse. A person realizes me by my sarup, qualities, and opulences. After that, knowing me in truth, by the potency of my devotion, one enters into me and thus becomes connected with me. One entering the city becomes united with the city and doesn't become one with the city. The cause of the realization can only be devotion. First, he realizes my qualities, opulences, then he comes to me. Or another meaning is that he knows me by devotion and then he enters into me. Thus he performs devotional service after liberation. The Shrutis and Smritis all say this. When avidya is destroyed by devotion, one relishes bhakti even more, just as a jaundiced person who has become cured really tastes sugar candy, although he has been eating it all along. Very good example. So the Brahmavadi, it's been the third kind. It's been mixing a little bhakti in with his gyan, right? This is bhakti mishra gyan, right? And so he's been tasting bhakti the whole time. But then at a certain point, through like meeting a Mahabhagavad or meeting the Lord or some kind of connection with devotees like this, or maybe, you know, like fasting on Ekadashi, he gets some, you know, bhakti umuki sukriti. Right? So then bhakti will become manifest, and then suddenly it becomes very sweet to him. Right? Itam bhuta gano hari. And he's tasting the qualities of the Lord that before, because he was jaundiced by too much jnana, he couldn't taste it, but now it comes to the point where he can actually taste it. Now, I'll read Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary here. A sadhaka attains the nature of Brahma when he becomes free from the impure designations as sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. This means that he attains a state of pure consciousness free from any covering. Thus he becomes prasannatma. Having achieved this state, he neither laments for what he has lost, nor hankers for what he doesn't possess. He's free from bodily misidentification. His desire for jnana becomes satiated, just like a fire that's become extinguished due to lack of fuel. He attains my imperishable bhakti in the form of shravan and kirtan. Bhakti is a function of my Sarup Shakti and continues to exist even when ajnana and jnana cease, because it is separate from my Maya Shakti. Therefore, param means separate or superior to jnana. In other words, param means kevala bhakti, which is devoid of nishkam karma, jnana, etc. The word labhate means that previously bhakti was partially situated in jnana and vairagya, practiced for moksha. I'll read that again. The word labhate means that previously bhakti, which was partially situated in jnana and vairagya, being practiced for moksha, was not realized. Just as the supersoul situated in all beings cannot be realized easily. Therefore, labhate is used instead of kurute. A golden gem, which has been mixed in with dal or grains, can be retrieved even when the dal is destroyed by grinding, because the gem is more durable. In the same way, bhakti, which is partially situated in jnana and vairagya, can be achieved independently when jnana and vairagya are dispelled. See, jnana and vairagya then become like something like garbage to be thrown away compared to bhakti. But in the beginning, jnana and vairagya help the person. And that's also described by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that in the beginning, jnana and vairagya can be helpful, but ultimately they should be rejected because they can make the heart hard, hard-hearted, and then you can't love Krishna. So we have to get rid of it. This is the most opportune time to attain pure prema bhakti. The result of such bhakti is never so huge a mukti. Therefore, the word param here must mean prema lakshana bhakti, or bhakti with symptoms of prema. So it's like, you know, we have the examples of the Brahma Kumaris and the four Kumaris. Atmaramas Chamunaya. So when somehow or other a Brahmavadi comes in contact either with a Mahabhagavad or with Lord Vishnu, or maybe some miraculous thing happens, he gets some contact with pure bhakti, then he's like a dry piece of paper. And there's a spark. It just bursts into flames. Right? Because there's no modes. Right? There's no attachments. He's just like a clean mirror. He'll just reflect whatever's put in front of him. That's why Vishnu Chakravarti says, this is the most opportune time to get pure prema bhakti. And Krishna also said in chapter 7 that Tesham Gyani Nitya Yuktas Eka Bhakti Rabashishite Priyahi Gyani Natyartha Mahamsacha Mama Priya. Right? These Gyanis are the best because they don't have any attachment. So if they meet Krishna and then they become attracted to Krishna, it's not because they're in distress or they want money or they're a little inquisitive. Right? They already have Brahma Bhuta. So we have to understand that this verse, I read the commentary to 54. All right, so I'm sorry. But this verse, Bhaktya Mam Abhijananti, comes after the Brahma Bhuta platform. Right? So the person already has Brahma Bhuta. When becomes attracted to the Lord, it's not for any other motive. So Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, therefore, more or less, his devotion is pure. Of course, it could, tad anantara means like afterwards, right? At the end, vishate, mam, right? He enters into me, right? After knowing me in truth, then thereafter he enters. Well, it can mean that. But here, it means that he, as Baladeva Vidyabhushan mentions, that coming into the city doesn't mean that you become one with the city. And Prabhupada gives example about the green bird entering the green tree. Prabhupada writes that becoming Brahman does not mean that one loses his identity. Devotional service is there, and as long as devotional service exists, there must be God, the devotee, and the process of devotional service. Such knowledge is never vanquished, even after liberation. Liberation involves getting free from the concept of material life. In spiritual life, the same distinction is there, the same individuality is there, but in pure Krishna consciousness. One should not mistakenly think the word vishate enters into me supports the monist theory that one becomes homogeneous with the impersonal Brahman. No. Vishate means that one can enter into the abode of the Supreme Lord in one's individuality to engage in his association and render service unto him. For instance, a green bird enters a green tree not to become one with the tree, but to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Impersonalists generally give the example of a river flowing into the ocean and merging. There may be some source of happiness for the impersonalist, but the personalist keeps his personal individuality like an aquatic in the ocean. We find so many living entities within the ocean if we go deep. Surface acquaintance with the ocean is not sufficient. One must have complete knowledge of the aquatics living in the ocean depths. That's even a better example. Huh? The categories of? Yeah, and they become pure devotees. Well, we saw that the four Kumars, they met the Lord directly. I mean, along with Garuda, Lakshmi, and Jayan Vijay, who they cursed. Right, they're special. Well, when they approach the Lord, you know, it's just a matter of time sequence. They're coming to the Lord, and they don't know what to expect. Like the four Kumaras, they weren't devotees. That's why they got angry at Jai and Vijay for not letting them to come in. But then later, when they became devotees, they felt very sorry, and they were very humble, and they were apologizing like this, so that humility became manifest. So, when they're approaching the Lord, but they're approaching from that, you know, that platform of Jnani. And they're considered better because they're not motivated by any of the other motivations. Just some attraction is there, like this, something. It brings them to the Lord or to the Lord's devotees. So when they surrender, then they're better than the other three. They're like on the cusp, but they're just coming to the Lord. They're becoming devotees. When they're approaching, they're not devotees. Then they meet the Lord. Then they're changed. Then afterwards they become devotees. It's possible. It's no guarantee, but they have a very good chance because they're completely pure. These Brahmavadis are completely pure. If they're, you know, if they come to their Siddha Brahmabhuta platform. So in one sense, they're the best people to preach to. But then you should be careful because then they may, you know, make you a Brahmavadi. Right? If you're not powerful enough. It says Mahabhagavat, they meet Mahabhagavat devotees. Like Narada or something like this. on this level. Yes, that's generally the understanding, because the acharyas are commenting that this can only be this higher level of bhakti by the previous word, parabhakti, in the previous verse. That can only mean keval bhakti. So that keval bhakti is only attained by that fourth jnani, who becomes a devotee, actually. Ishwara Yunishtam. Yeah. Yeah, he's just offering to the Lord in his heart. And the other, it's just he's offering it to the Lord without thinking he's in the heart, or maybe he's not meditating in such a way. That's called that's another way of calling another dhyana yoga. In other words, that Ishwara Nishtha, he's meditating on the Lord in the heart. No. Well, it can be like Krishna's describing dhyana. He says ultimately, I and the super soul are one, right? And in chapter 15, he said, Sarvasya Chaham Riti Sadivishto, I am the super soul, right? I'm in the heart of all beings. So I'm that Ishwara. So, you know, people can do dhyana yoga and be meditating on Bhagavan in the heart. Like Hanuman, he opens his heart, there's Ram, not Vishnu, right? So, that's a different kind of, kind of antaryami yoga, you know. I mean, just through Ashtanga yoga on Paramatma, one cannot achieve prema. But if one is doing this Ishwara Nishtha and he's meditating on Bhagavan in the heart, or Ishwara in the heart, right? And he's actually approaching bhakti, but in a kind of way which sounds similar to Ashtanga yoga, but it's different. That's why it's called Ishwara Nishtha. So like all of the different practices like vairagya, varnashram dharma, and meditation, the bhavas of these angas change according to the nishta. Because people in Brahma nishta can do them, people in Ishwara nishta can do them, and then they change. And people in Bhagavan nishta do them, they change again. The same thing. The Brahma body could be meditating on Brahman. Or a yogi can be meditating on the Paramatma. Or a devotee can be meditating on the Lord in his heart. So all these things are not so like cut and dry as we think, black and white. There's these angas of Dharma are interchangeable according to the shift. Therefore, it says Brahmati, Paramatmati, Bhagavan, Iti Shabyate. This is all the Supreme Absolute Truth, and depending on the person's nishta, that he'll approach in a certain way. I can't give a full description, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was commenting in a consequent verse that he was saying that Krishna is giving Arjuna these choices, and he can choose what he likes to do. And he says that this Ishwara Nishtha, he can meditate on the Lord, perform his occupational duties, and offer that to the Lord within his heart. And that's what Krishna is talking about later here, just in a few verses. It's not talking about a Paramatma yogi meditating on Paramatma. He's talking about the Paramatma, but he's talking about that Paramatma as himself. And that would be considered for Arjuna, who's a devotee, this Ishwara Nishtha. That's further on. It's hard. It's like, I'm preparing 10 verses, and I can't keep all every single comment in my head at the same time. Something else? Well, Krishna said that. Jnanam cha mai sanyasat. One should give up the knowledge and the means for attaining the knowledge, which means vairagya and tapasya, and analytical study, sankhya, things like this. Jnana karma jnavartam. Well, yeah, I guess so. It seems to fit this that description. I mean, it's those verses haven't been like connected by anybody. Generally, that the word jnana means monistic speculation, monistic conception of the Supreme. What's that? He has to give that up, because like the third kind of jnani has this monistic conception. So he goes to Sayuja. So that's the result of Gyan Mishra Bhakti. It's a kind of bhakti, but it's not Keval Bhakti, it's not Uttama Bhakti. So Vibhu Goswami he's very strict. His presentation of bhakti is Uttama Bhakti. Those other bhaktis, and we see that the result is much different. In which context? You give up jnana and you when you have vijnana. Here, just in what we're discussing, in talking about Brahma Bhuta, realizing Brahma, Brahman. But it can be the initial stage of realizing Bhagavan also. It's realizing that God is present everywhere. And as Prabhupada said, that's the last step for the impersonalists, but the devotees, that's like the first step. Well, for a devotee, dhyana means to meditate on Bhagavan. So for him, he's meditating on Brahman. Sattva-gun jnan means self-realization, and he understands Brahma, Brahman. Himself as part of Brahman. Yeah. He has the realization of the Lord's, all-pervading nature. Normally we see that he comes through Ishvara Nishtha, through Ashtanga Yoga. What in this case? He can do through Nishkam Karma Yoga. Nishkam Karma Yoga is also in Brahma Nishtha. And it can be also in Ishvara Nishtha. Well, you already gave the example. But their anger was not material anger. It was because they were being stopped by Jayan Vijaya from seeing the Lord. It wasn't that they were trying to obtain something for their senses. So it's kind of spiritual anger of a Brahmavadi. Yeah, it's not ordinary anger. That's a good question. But their father, Lord Brahma, directed them. So Brahmavadi, his idea is that if he's the third kind, which it appears that they were until they attained the fourth kind, the fourth level. And that was that they thought that the Lord was spiritual, a manifestation of Brahman. Sarva karmanyapi sada kurvano madhyapashrayaha matprasadadavapnoti shashvatam padamavyayam. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. So now we're seeing some special feature of the Lord for his devotee. So someone might ask that, how do your devotees attain this? higher stages. So Krishna is now talking about his devotees, and he says, mat prasadat avapnoti, that they attain my mercy. And they go to that imperishable supreme abode, that eternal abode of mine. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in this way, gradually, after giving up the fruits of activity, then the activity, then knowledge itself, they attain sayujya. I have explained this, and now I will explain how my devotee attains me. So he uses the word madhyapashraya. So vi is from the word vishesha, which means special or specific. And apa here means like not prominent. In other words, if the person, he doesn't surrender completely in the sense that even if he has some material desires, he can attain perfection. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said something like, the Sakam devotee can reach me, then what to speak of the Nishkam devotee? And then furthermore, what can be said of the Ananya Bhakta? Because Madhyapashraya indicates that even if the person is a Sakam Bhakta, he may have some material desire still, but still he can attain the Lord's mercy and achieve the Lord. Sarva Karmani, even though he's performing all his different activities, he's still in Sakam or Nishkam. He's still engaged in his karma. And Api is important here because it indicates, although he's doing all of these worldly duties in Varnashram Dharma, Nitya, Naimittic karmas, which indicates that he considers them to be inferior to his bhakti and his worship of the Lord. The word api means although. So although he's performing all these activities, he doesn't consider them very important. His primary consideration is his love for Krishna. So he gives secondary priority to duties and first to bhakti. Looking beyond just material happiness. And they also have devotional desires. Like we have the verse which we've quoted many times, Yadrichaya Madkatado Jata Shradastu Yapaman Nanilvino Nati Sapto Bhakti Yoga Susirida. So that person, he still is attached, but he's not too much attached that he can't become a devotee. But he still has some, he still may have some material desires. But they're not enough to cover his bhakti completely. Because why? Because he considers them secondary. So it's the parinishtita level. His bhakti is first, on the front burner, high priority in his life. And his occupational duties are secondary. But he's still doing them, and he still needs to do them because he still has some material desires. So the word ashraya, the shri is found there, this root shri, which means Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi takes shelter of Narayan, right? So that's what it means to take shelter, like following in the line of Lakshmi Devi. So actually this word vyapashraya has a lot of different important meanings in this verse. So mat prasadat avapnoti, that they can obtain my mercy, or such a person, engage my pure devotee, he obtains my mercy. And Shashvatam Padam Avyayam, he attains this eternal abode. So Shashvatam Padam indicates Mathura or Dwarka or Vaikuntha or Ayodhya. And of course it can also mean Vrindavan for someone who has such Braja Bhakti. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has described, going back to the first two words, Sarvakarmani. He says, Sarvakarmani indicates you should become a Nishkam Bhakta by offering all your acts to me, whether they're related to ashram or varna dharma. I am the only goal of such Nishkam Bhaktas. I've already explained this in 926. Or is that 927? That yad karoshi yad ashnashi. I think there was a mistake there. Not talking about patram pushpam sloka. I've already explained this in yad karoshi yad ashnashi. This verse must be. So we already described this parinishtita level and this nishkam Mishra, Gyan Mishra, Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. So, now, Arjuna is wondering, he says, this doesn't sound right. Again, he takes many births, and he performs so much austerity, and performs so much difficult, tapasya, after such a long time, with so much difficulty. So, how is it possible, then, that your devotee, who has little knowledge and is not even renounced, how can he attain the spiritual world? What is the logic? And Krishna's answer is, the logic is that it is beyond logic. it's by mat prasadat avapnoti, by my mercy. My mercy has inconceivable power in it. So someone who gets the mercy of Krishna, then he gets everything. So a little bit of bhakti can go a long way. If someone's thinking about the Lord and doing some service for his pleasure with a feeling of affection, then Krishna takes that as more important and more advanced than someone who has so much vairagya and so much knowledge and so much sense control and so much this or that. So Krishna is looking for that bhakti in the heart. And that little bit of bhakti can carry you all the way to this Shashvadam Padam. The famous example of Lord Ramachandra appreciating the spider kicking in a few grains of sand into the ocean to help build the bridge. So that spider, he didn't have any knowledge, he wasn't studying the Vedas, he didn't do any austerities, he had no knowledge, right? He never did any varna or ashram duties, nitya or naimitic karmas. He just wanted to help. And then, look what he did. And Prabhupada tells about the lady in Rana Damodar who was just bringing water every morning, right? She didn't know shloka, she wasn't performing any great austerities, she didn't have knowledge, atma gyan of the soul. But she just did some seva. And he said, just that seva alone, they'll bring her back to Godhead. So in this verse we see that the power of bhakti. Chaitanya Charitamrita Kaviraj Goswami says, prema hoite Krishna hoy nija bhakta vash, prema hoite pai krishnara seva sukaras. Just a little insignificant devotee can actually conquer God just with some seemingly insignificant seva. But that service is enjoyed and tasted as very sweet by the Lord. And this way, the devotee and the Lord, they enjoy a very nice relationship. Premahorte Pai Krishnara Seva Sukaras. This is Seva Ras. And they both enjoy happiness in this exchange. Oh, he's attached to Krishna, but he still has some material desires. But he's trying to get rid of them. He wants Krishna. And he still has some worldly engagements and worldly attachments. He can be sakam. That's what the word vi in vyapashraya indicates. That's the speciality, is that the person can still be on such a level. And apa means he may still have material desires.
And if you say such devotee, if he dies, he goes back to God, or such a devotee very quickly comes to the pure state, then transcends to the spiritual world.
Yeah, that's the general way. Yeah, if someone dies in karma mishra bhakti, then he goes to swarga. He has to come to the pure level before he can go back to Godhead.
So here Krishna is meaning that he achieves means very quickly he achieves the pure platform.
Yeah, it can happen in that one lifetime. Yeah. I mean, the commentators haven't described in such detail, but we use the other statements from other places, then we have to come to that conclusion. But there's no clear statement to answer your question. When someone dies, not talking about the person dying, just that he comes to this platform. Yeah, he can, from Sakam, he comes very quickly purified by the mercy of Krishna. As the other comment said, but these jnanis, they take so many births after such a long time and so much hardship, and your devotee comes to you so quickly and easily, and he has hardly any knowledge, he's not even renounced, but he becomes renounced very quickly. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakta Yoga Prayojita Jnana Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahoitakam. What, here? It can be... He's talking about different devotees, but it can be as low as Sakam. He's, a devotee that has Sakam, doing Sakam karma, which means he's, influenced by passion. But if there's bhakti there, then he is very quickly brought to this higher level. So here, this verse, Krishna had explained, actually in the beginning, that I have explained how gradually by giving up the fruits of activity, then the activity itself, one attains knowledge, and then one gives up that knowledge. By giving up that knowledge, one attains sayuja. Now I will explain how my devotee attains me. So this is Ishvara Nishtha. The previous was Brahmanishtha, where karma and jnana are discussed. But here, it's just you surrender, and then you get it. You get the same result. So the only cost here is the dependence on the Lord and surrender to the Lord. The Lord in the heart. And he's the Lord in the heart. But if the person's a devotee, then it's not Paramatma, then it's Krishna. The Ishvara in the heart can be the son of Nanda, it can be Dwarkadish, Ram, or Narayan. Or it can just be Paramatma, Shivadakshay Vishnu. So when they say Ishvara Nishtha, they're not just restricting it to Shivadakshay Vishnu, of the Ashtanga yogis. Not restricted. Because Ishvara means the supreme control. It means that it can be any Lord. It can be Narayan. It can be Shirodakshaya Vishnu. He's also Ishvara. No, it also refers to them. But if the person's not just absorbed in hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord and absorbed in the beautiful form of the Lord, chanting, right? Then he's just thinking, the Lord's in my heart and I want to serve him and give him the results of my work. and I surrender to Him. So the idea, the main thing is that he's surrendering, doing the work of the Lord. It can be different, as we said, it can be sakam, nishkam, or ananya. Vishwanath Chakravarti said that the sakam devotee can attain the nishkam, or then what to speak of the keval bhakta. So Krishna's talking in a very broad sense here about all of his devotees. But the point is that even the ones that are attached and doing worldly duties and they have some desires, that I give them my mercy and they can also attain my supreme abode. Because the previous thing in Ganamarg, please don't talk. In Ganamarg, it's very restricted. It's like you have to develop renunciation and you have to come up to a high level of Brahma Bhuta before you can really get anywhere. But here, we see that this surrender becomes, the Lord becomes affected by that, touched by that, and he brings the devotee up. So it's not so restrictive. So Krishna's not telling Arjuna, you have to come on this level. You know, you have to come up to here. You must renounce everything now. He doesn't say that. He says you can act as you like, but do it for me. Surrender to, or he said, now he's going to say surrender to him. Or you can do it through Brahmanishtha by doing Nishkam Karma and coming to Gyan and renouncing Gyan and all of this. Or you can surrender to him, the super soul, and just do everything for him. Or you can surrender everything, give up all of those things and just surrender to me. So there's these three ways. And he's giving Arjuna this choice. You can do any of these. So 56 is just the beginning. Okay, let's go to the next verse. So what are you finally ordering me to do? Ananya bhakti or sakam bhakti? Right? So Arjuna's wondering, what is your instruction for me here? Chetasa sarva karmani mayi sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upashritya machita satatam bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Right? So here's a direct order for Arjuna. He's saying that you should be constantly absorbed in me with resolute intelligence, buddhi yoga. In other words, always remember me while working or in any situation. So here in buddhi yoga, it means always remember the Lord. Take shelter of buddhi yoga. Basically, it just means remember me always. Chaitasa sarva karman, in all activities. Right? And surrender everything to me. Matpara, again, we see, as way back in 261, right, the same word was used. Matpara. You know, take shelter of me under my protection. So 56 was in the third case, like one does, he does. But this verse is directly to Arjuna in the second case. And is what, and it's also describing what everyone else should do. That offer any activity of work or whatever in your mind, my Lord, be pleased by this work. And two, take shelter of buddhi yoga. Yet the intelligence and mind is completely fixed in union with Krishna. Arjuna was saying, you're speaking in general. What is your specific order for me? Shall I do bhakti, ananya bhakti, or sakam bhakti? So Krishna says that you're not qualified to do keval bhakti, Arjuna. But also, at the same time, you're not on the Sakam level, so you should become Madhyam Bhakta. Do something which is pitched in the middle. So he says, what to do? And Krishna says, you do your duties and offer them to me. Don't have any material goals. Perform your activities and remember me. Perform your activities without the ego of being the doer. In your mind, make me the object of your work and remember me in all that you do. Surrender to me and act. Do not perform your activities and then surrender. In other words, surrender your consciousness as you do the activity. And then you'll become purified, and I will take full care of you. Here in the commentary, Prabhupada says, the Sanskrit word matpara is very important. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. Again, the goal, right, the motive, is very important. And while working that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. Even the person may be completely swamped with so many family duties, working in the world, and he has to perform some social obligations to the other relatives, and, you know, so many religious obligations. And he may himself be attached to his work or the fruit of the work or like this. But the person actually develops this mood of surrender to the Lord and thinks of him. This, you know, dhyana yoga para, it can be applied also here. He's thinking the Lord and he's offering the work to the Lord, which was the same meditation described in the previous section about the varna and ashram activities. But the idea is he's taking shelter of Buddha Yoga. It means he's thinking of Krishna. And that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. If he does that, then everything will be adjusted. And he will become renounced even while doing all these other things. Gradually, internally, everything will happen for him. What's that? It seems to be the same. Because that's what he told Arjuna to do. This is his pitch for Arjuna as his guru. He's telling that this is exactly what you should do.
So you said that just now, you become a Madhyama Bhakta, think of me while doing all activities.
Mm-hmm.
And like doing work and then offering
No, he said that you offer it before you act. Right? Not that you do the work and then offer it at the end. That was the
whatever one wants to do, and then
offers to that. Oh, at the end?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So then this is higher. Yeah, this is a little bit higher. If there's some false ego still, some separate mentality, then the devotee will he makes the offering at the end, of his activities, because he considers them still his. But in Ananya Bhakti, he offers everything right from the very beginning, and then he performs the activity. So then there's no need to make some separate conscientious offering at the end. He's using his consciousness, his Buddha Yoga, right from the very beginning. There seems to be still, I mean, Arjuna is playing the role of someone who's still attached to his work. So since he's playing that role, and Krishna is recognizing that, so he's telling him, you do your duties, and you just offer them to me, but not like in, you know, Sakam or Nishkam karma, but higher, something higher, which is close, very close to bhakti, where, you know, like the bhakti is the primary consideration, the high priority. And you're just doing the worldly duties because you still have some, you know, rajas or some attachment. But your consciousness is fixed. Your goal is not to enjoy the world or to any worldly goal. The consciousness is and the goal is towards loving Krishna. But there's still some activities going on within Varna and Ashram. But Sarvadharma Priyaja then is talking about giving those up. There may be some other, I don't know, subtler points, but I haven't seen anything about this. Maybe it will become more clear as we continue. 58. So the question is, what would happen as a result of doing 57? And that's given in 58. The results of following and not following in the next two verses. And the results of following are in the next verse. Or following and not following in the next verse. Matchita sarva durgani mat prasada tarishyasi atachetvam ahankaran nasroshyasi vinankshyasi. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So, let's see, 58. I'll read something. Maladeva Dibhushan comments here. After fixing your mind on me, you will cross all miseries. You should not worry. I am the friend of the devotees, and I'll give myself to them, and I'll solve all their problems. Here Krishna is describing the process for the parinishta devotees. If you don't listen, due to being puffed up, you'll fall down. Except for me, no one knows what the living entity should do or not do. After fixing your mind on me, you'll cross over all the miseries. You should not worry. I am the friend of my devotees, and I'll give myself to them and solve all their problems. But if you don't listen to me, and you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, then you'll be lost. So then Arjuna says, it's a fact that I'm a Kshatriya, and that it's my nature. But if I fight and kill them, I'll incur sin, so I don't want to fight. So then Krishna becomes a little angry and speaks text 59 in a raised voice. Yad ahankaram ashritya na yotsya iti manyase mityaisha vyavasayaste prakritistam niyokshati. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Krishna says, now you're not honoring my words, but later, because you're a great hero, O Mahavira, your natural eagerness to fight will manifest. Then when you try to kill Bhishma on your own, I'll laugh at you. Which is interesting, because here he says that you would fight anyway, Arjuna. We see that Krishna throughout the whole Gita has been trying to inspire Arjuna to fight. He's telling him, you know, through karma yoga that he should do his duty, and jnana yoga that he should renounce his ego and attachment to work, and you know, and that he should just perform his occupational duty and surrender to him and so on and so forth. So he's been trying to inspire him to fight in so many different ways, but now he's saying that actually you will just fight on your own, being pushed by the material modes of nature, by your own swabhav, by your prakriti. So it indicates that Krishna knows that Arjuna is going to fight anyway. And actually, he showed that he didn't need Arjuna, because he said, I've already killed them. And he manifested the universal form. So why is he speaking so many things and telling so many things to try to get Arjuna to fight? Just so that Arjuna will fight in devotion and think of Krishna while he's doing it. Instead of just fighting according to the modes of nature, being like a puppet, you know, by the modes of nature. So he's going to do the same thing, but he's going to do it under the internal energy, not according to the material energy, which will completely purify his activity and set an example for everyone, that everyone can understand how to do devotion and still perform one's duties. So Prabhupada here writes, Arjuna was a military man and born of the nature of the Kshatriya. Therefore his natural duty was to fight. But due to false ego, he was fearing that by killing his teacher, grandfather, and friends, he would incur sinful reactions. Actually, he was considering himself master of his actions, as if he were directing the good and bad results of such work. He forgot that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present there, instructing him to fight. That is the forgetfulness of the conditioned soul. So he calls him Mahavir, right? All powerful one. Mahavir. So, you know, it's not that sometimes people, they criticize that, you know, devotees, they just sit around praying all day and they're not practical. They don't offer any, you know, practical service to the community, to the society. And they're just sitting around meditating. But here we see that Krishna is encouraging Arjuna to act in his natural role in society and be dynamic and use his energies for the service of Krishna. Prabhupada, once in a morning walk in Los Angeles, he was describing this phenomena, and he said that, yes, actually, we don't want these, you know, sitting down Vaishnavas, these lazy people who just, you know, sit around trying to lick up Krishna. But we want Vaishnavas who are dynamic, that are powerful, that are engaged in so many services, that are active. And then he described that in this world, the two biggest wars were between Ravana and Ram, and between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And in both cases, the hero was a devotee, Hanuman and Arjuna. So he said, these are the kind of devotees we want. We want these, you know, type of heroes, Vaishnavas, not sitting down, lazy, dull Vaishnavas. And then he said, we want Arjunas or we want no one. So dynamic, you know, using the person's own nature that is already God-given and using that in the service of the Supreme Lord. Not these sitting down rascals, just useless. So this idea is further explained in verse 59. This verse 60 explains this idea further. Subhava jena kaunteya nibbadha svena karmana kartum nechasi yan mohad karishya syavasho pitat. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, but compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. So Krishna says, you have your nature, which is born of previous samskaras, so you'll be forced to act, just like a puppet. The strings being pulled by illusion, by Maya. So it indicates that everybody must be controlled, either by Krishna or by Maya. So it's just a matter of choosing who do you want to be controlled by. So everyone in this material world is being pulled by the strings of Maya Devi. And we have that picture in the Bhagavad Gita, right? The man is digging the hole, and there's another man telling him to dig the hole, and they're both being, that you know, controlled by the strings from some higher beings. So everybody has their nature according to their purva samskar, and that will push you to act in a certain way. So, but if you surrender to Krishna, then Krishna will pull the strings, not Maya Devi. Right. And Prabhupada says, but anyone who voluntarily engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious, not just some puppet. But who is ultimately controlling Prakriti and illusion and rotating everyone through birth and death on the wheel of samsara? This is the Lord. Or the answer is given in text 61. Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. So Baladeva Nibhushan comments that when Krishna spoke the last few verses, Arjuna was still possessing some false ego that he knows better. So to make him give this up, he speaks this verse, Ishvara Sarvabhutana. That Ishvara is the controller. He's rotating and controlling the movements of all the living entities. Krishna says, O Arjuna, if you think yourself a great scholar, you should know that the Supersoul is in the hearts of all beings. According to their karma, each has a separate body made of maya. The living entity is riding on these machines, and the Lord rotates them. He is like a puppeteer who makes his puppets move. Therefore, take shelter of the Supersoul with body, mind, and speech. Thus, you become completely free from all miseries and attain Vishnu Loka. And that Ishvara is also me, your friend, in the heart of all beings. Although I spoke in the third person to surrender to the Ishvara as if it were someone else, but you have already understood that I am that Ishvara. And that is proven by my previous statement, Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sannivishta. And by your agreement to this, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, and in accord with Narada, Devala, Asita, and Vyas. So, and also by the empiric proof of your vision of the Vishwarup. So, become situated in my instructions and then act. So there you have a very interesting idea. We know that throughout the Gita, even in the sixth chapter, Krishna said that I and the Supersoul are one. And then again, he manifested Visharup, four-handed form, in 11th chapter. And in the 15th chapter, he said, I am situated in everyone's heart, and I am the goal of the Vedas. So it's become very clear that Krishna himself is that Ishvara. That's just an aspect of Krishna, a manifestation of Krishna. It's his expansion. So he's the one who's directing the wanderings of all living entities. Prabhupada ends his commentary saying, one should not think himself independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual is always under the Lord's control. Therefore, one's duty is to surrender. And that is the injunction of the next verse. So to explain the significance of surrender to him, Krishna speaks verse 62. And this is like the culmination of the last few verses in this section. Tam eva sharanam gacha sarva bhavena bharata tat prasadat param shantim stanam prapsyasi shashvatam. O sign of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that some think those who worship the Paramatma get this result. But the results of those who worship and surrender to Bhagavan will be explained later. Others think, my Ishtadev, Sri Krishna, is my only guru. He alone will bestow bhakti upon me and give me all good instruction. I surrender unto him. Sri Krishna himself is my antaryami. May he alone engage me in his service. I take exclusive shelter of him. This was just some section of the commentary which gave this important idea. So, if your Ishtadev is Krishna and you have faith in him, then for him he's your antaryami, then you surrender to him. Depends on what is your faith in your heart. We see the same idea in the 11th canto in the Uddhava Gita, 11:29-6. This is the Bhakti Yoga section of the Uddhava Gita. I'll just read the English and the commentary. O my Lord, transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science could not fully express their indebtedness to you even if they were endowed with the prolonged lifetime of Brahma. For you appear in two features, externally as the Acharya and internally as the Supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you. So this is Uddhava speaking directly to Krishna. So he's saying that you come as the Acharya and as the Supersoul. So, according to Jiva Goswami, Lord Krishna is 10 million times more dear to a devotee than life itself. And according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, even by rendering devotional service for the total duration of 1,000 universal creations, a devotee cannot repay the debt he feels to the Lord for having awarded him loving service to the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord appears within the heart of as the Supersoul, and externally, both as the spiritual master. The Lord appears within the heart as the Supersoul, and externally, both as the spiritual master and as his literary incarnation, the supreme Vedic knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so here's the last verse that we'll read tonight. Iti te gyanam akhyatam guya guya taram maya bimrishyai tarashe shena yate chasi tata kuru. Thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. So iti indicates that the teachings end here, officially. The teachings of the Gita stop here. And Krishna has described this guya and guyatara paths, or the Brahmanishta and Ishwaranishta, knowledge of Brahman and knowledge of the Ishwar in the heart. Prabhupada writes, the Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma-bhuta. Don't talk, please. The Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma-bhuta, right, in 54. One who is in the Brahma-bhuta condition is joyful. He never laments, nor does he desire anything. That is due to confidential knowledge. Krishna also discloses knowledge of the Supersoul. This is also Brahman knowledge, knowledge of Brahman, but is superior. That was from 61 and 62. Well, those two verses we just read. Here, the words tatejasi tatakuru, as you like, you may act, indicate that God does not interfere with the little independence of the living entity. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has explained in all respects how one can elevate his living condition. The best advice imparted to Arjuna is to surrender unto the Supersoul seated within his heart. By right discrimination, One should agree to act according to the order of the Supersoul. That will help one become situated constantly in Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of life. Arjuna is being directly ordered by the Supreme Lord to fight. Surrender to the Lord is in the best interest of the living entities. It is not for the interest of the Supreme. Before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on the subject as far as the intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such instruction comes also through the spiritual master, the bona fide representative of Krishna. I believe it was in this verse. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made this commentary here and in another place later on. But he describes these different levels. So it's clear that we're talking about these two levels, Brahma and Paramatma, by the word Guhya and Guhyatara. And he says to Arjuna that you think about this, deliberate on it fully. And he's giving Arjuna the chance to choose which path Arjuna likes to work and surrender to him. That's what he's talking about. Because he's giving him the choice of these different ways to surrender to him or to make spiritual advancement. So Arjuna could work and go through the path of Gyan, like the Brahma Nishtha platform. And he can just do Nishkam Karma, do his fighting as Nishkam Karma, then gradually come to knowledge, and then renounce the knowledge, and then come to Brahma Bhuta, and in this way come to Nirgun Bhakti. Or he can surrender his work while fighting, while remembering the Lord in his heart, and take shelter of Buddha Yoga and Ishvara Nishtha. So he's, of course we know that he already said Manmana Bhava before, and he's going to say that again. But Krishna is like giving Arjuna these two paths right now to choose from. And, Arjuna was very silent and he began to deliberate on all of the instructions that Krishna gave him throughout the whole Gita. And then Krishna was just looking at him while he was sitting there thinking. And Krishna started feeling very compassionate towards Arjuna, and his heart began to melt like butter. So then he decided, he pointed to his friend, and then he said, "Now I will speak the essence of this Gita Shastra to you. And you don't have to exert yourself anymore thinking of so many instructions." And that's from the next verse, but we'll do that tomorrow. In this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, "Thus the six chapters teaching on jnana is finished. That these six chapters of the Gita are jewels of spiritual education. They form part of a treasure chest containing the rarest secret of bhakti." And he describes this analogy of the Bhagavad Gita being like a golden box. You know, the bottom part is the first six chapters, mainly dealing with karma yoga. And the top of the box is also golden and has jewels covered on the top. And that's the jnana, the last six chapters. And then the middle six chapters is bhakti. That's the secret jewel, the hidden treasure inside of this box. And he says that these, on the jewels, on the top of the box, are written these two verses. Manmanabhava madbhakto saradama puridhyaja. And this is the key to open the box, to get, because once you get bhakti, then you can control Krishna. So it's kind of secret. It's not just given to everybody, because Krishna doesn't want to be controlled just by any person. The person has to be very special, not only pure, but devotional, non-envious, and like this, as hard, generous, as open-hearted person. So, this bhakti has the power to bring Krishna under control. So that's why it is somewhat secret and hidden. And this is the place where he gives this commentary. We also notice that Krishna says, yata ichasi tatakuru, that as you wish, you do. So Krishna is giving Arjuna freedom to act. He's not forcing him to do anything. And without having the freedom, then we wouldn't see any bhakti manifest from Arjuna's heart. Because bhakti is dependent on freedom. Because bhakti means the reciprocation of the jiva with the Lord. The devotee, he that's the way he reciprocates with the Lord. Machitta, what is that verse? From 10:9. Madgata prana. So, bodhayanta parasparam. So, the devotee is like always thinking of the Lord, and for him, the Lord is his life and soul. And he's always hearing and chanting about the Lord is his, you know, the beat of his heart. And he can't live without the Lord, just like a fish can't live out of the water. So, he's always serving the Lord, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. This is from his side, right? And that is, he's free to do. He can do or not do, but he likes to do that. That's his freedom. And unless there's freedom is there, then he can't express that. So the Krishna never interferes with the minute independence of the jiva. He never forces any jiva to come to him. That's why he even goes so far as to give the jiva faith in the deva and give, you know, different shastras which glorify that deva. Because if the person doesn't, he's not inclined to serve Krishna, then Krishna allows him to do as he wishes to do. So Krishna only wants those persons who want him. That's why he stays aloof, you know, from the kind of the limelight of the Vedic injunctions. You know, he hides himself because he wants those people who only want him. Otherwise, he could make it very obvious that if you don't surrender to Bhagavan, that you're going to suffer and go to hell. And he could have made the Vedas in such a way. And he could have made this world in such a way also, but he didn't do that. He made it so that we forget our previous lifetimes, we forget our constitutional position, right? But when we want to remember him, when we pray to him, then he gives us that memory back. Matasmritir gyanam apahanam cha. And then he comes as the Vedas and he gives the different process of coming to him. So he always gives this freedom. So this verse is important in so many ways. And that's one of the things which is important. So here Krishna says, thus I have explained knowledge of karma, jnana, and ashtanga. This is more secret than secret. In all the jnana shastras it is not known. This has not been revealed in the writings of Vashishta, Bhadarayana, or others like Narada. They have not written in their treatises about this which I am speaking to you, Arjuna. Even the sages do not know this completely. Being so confidential, I have not given it to them, but I have given it to you. Their omniscience is relative, but mine is complete. They don't know this tattva fully, because it is highly confidential. So now deliberate on it fully and then do what you wish to do. Okay, so we'll stop now. Someone might ask that Krishna said do whatever you like, but then why are there so many do's and don'ts in the Vedas? What would you say? How would you answer that? Somebody said that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Can add something to that's right. Krishna gives so many paths, right? But within those paths, there are rules. So you can choose whatever path you want, but then, like you go to, there's so many highways. When you go on the highway, you have to follow the rules of that highway. You have to pay tolls sometimes, right? If you go to a different country, you have to ride the car on the other side of the road. And in some places, you can go 50 kilometers per hour, sometimes 100. You can choose whatever road you like, but on each road there's some rules. Yeah? Chaitanya Charan, you wanted to say something? Or you have a question?
Krishna, like a well-wishing father, provides the right path for the soul. And he gives it up to the soul. Vedas say do this and not do this, because they provide. It is the duty of the father to tell what is right. It is an imposer on the son. That's why the Vedas give an injunction.
Right. So Krishna has mentioned this, what is the highest way. But he's given so many alternatives too. Even in the bhakti marg, right, there's so many levels. There's rag marg, abhyas marg, right? Bhagavan seva, or just karma pal tyag, or knowledge, meditation. Like in that verse, meditation also didn't mean meditation on the subasol, right? There was some other meaning. Anyone has any questions left? Yes?
So here now Krishna is mentioned to Arjuna, the path of Ishvara Nishtha.
Mm-hmm.
So, does it come in the line of what we are practicing, that Nishkam Bhakti, the Keval Bhakti, this comes in this path or it's a different way?
Well, I guess it depends on the devotee. I mean, we think that we're trying to follow the highest path of surrender to Bhagavan. Yeah, I mean it's obviously it's the highest one, because the main thing that we're stressing is hearing and chanting, not thinking of the Lord and offering the fruit of your work to Him in surrender. But just as the components of Jnana Marg and Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga are found within Bhakti, so similarly the components of Ishvara Nishtha is found in Bhagavat Nishtha also. Are we thinking of the Lord? We may not think that, we might not always or limit the meditation that He's in our heart, but we're thinking of Him in our heart sometimes, and that's also recommended for us, right? Not as Paramatma, but as Bhagavan, our Ishtadev. So that's, you know, that's part of our practice. And we may have to work, and even the devotional service we're doing, we have to take shelter of Buddha Yoga. I mean, you know, just because we say we're in Bhakti Marg, and we're doing something all day long, but if we're not thinking of Krishna, then we're not even an Ishvara Nishtha. You know what I mean? We claim we're on a high level, but we're not even, most of us are not even doing Ishvara Nishtha. We're not thinking of the Lord constantly in our heart while we're doing our work. Right? So we would do well to come to that level, and let's think of Kunja Bihari in our heart while we're distributing books, while we're, you know, talking to members, while we're, you know, cooking, whatever, like this. Yeah, he said that I am that Ishvara. So he's telling him to surrender to Him. But he said you can surrender to Him in your heart. You know that's me anyway. So it's just like, it's still bhakti and it's still coming to Krishna. It's just in a certain mood, a certain way, approach. It seems that way. Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard, you know, I haven't read books on Ishvara Nishtha Bhakti, you know. I just read this certain comment by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so I don't know all the manifestations, how it is, you know, practice and what are the lakshanas, and in this case it's like this, and in that case it's like this. He's just explaining that these three levels, that Krishna's presenting these choices to Arjuna, that he can come to him in either of these three ways. It's all coming to Nirgun Bhakti or Keval Bhakti, but there's different ways to go about it. And they're, you know, they're all part and parcel of our practice. Ultimately, we know that Bhagavan, you know, surrender to Bhagavan includes everything else. So we try to do that. But as I said, that, you know, we would do well to think of the Lord in our heart, wouldn't we? Let us at least do that. And then we can say that, oh yeah, we sarva dharma prityaja, we've give up all other dharmas, and we just completely surrender to Krishna in pure bhakti. But pure bhakti means you're always thinking of the Lord constantly. So it's not so easy to do an Anya Bhakti. That's why Krishna told Arjuna, you're not qualified to do it. Because you still got some rajas, and the mind's not completely controlled, the sense's not completely controlled. So, you know, basically we're doing more like what Arjuna is doing. Because we also, we're common men, you know, we're not like some big Siddha Mahatmas. And we have some rajas and tamas and different modes affecting us. And so we and Prabhupada stressed, you know, work now, samadhi later. We have to be very active, right? We can't just sit like a jnani. It's simple, but it's not so easy to do. So we're doing our service, and we're trying to think of Krishna while we're doing it, because we're doing services which are related to Krishna, preaching, and, you know, temple services. So that helps us to do the work and think of Krishna. The grihasthas have a harder time because they have to work outside and they're more disconnected, right, from direct service for preaching and for the temple. But they also have to think of Krishna while they're doing their work. So if they can think of the Lord in their heart, then the temple's in their heart. And the brahmacharis also have to do that. Just because you wear saffron and you live in the ashram doesn't guarantee that you're going to be thinking of Krishna while you're out preaching all the time, or while you're cleaning the temple or whatever. So we can take from even from Ashtanga Yoga some principles, right? And what to speak of Ishvara Nishtha, which is like, you know, which is being told to Arjuna here, as a way to for him to offer his service to the Lord, a way that he can surrender to the Lord. So we can, borrow the, you know, aspects or components of these kinds of things and try to practice them. I don't know, haven't done that research. By his devotion. We have so many people like that, that congregational people, they have desires. They want to have a house, they want to have children, they want to have a wife, and they work, they want some independence and some, you know, wealth. And they're devotees. You know, like Jayadev. He's the guy's pure, you know, he's very humble, he's real Vaishnav. And he has some bhakti, you know, and it's like, so Krishna looks in the heart. He's Bhavagrahi Janardhan. So maybe he's, you know, I don't know this person, I'm just using a devotee as an example. You know, maybe he's more attached to, you know, kind of, enjoying mortal living, you know, material life than the brahmacharis are. But maybe he's, you know, offering to his little deity with more devotion than we are on the altar in the temple. So if that's true, then it means that the Lord's appreciating him more than us. And that this example of Dhanadhar And Hemamba from the Sri Sampradaya proves that point. Right? Because Krishna doesn't care about the ashram or the level of renunciation very much. Or the age of the person. Or his knowledge. He doesn't care about it. He just cares about how much does this person love me. And that can manifest in anyone. He's more attached to, you know, more attached than we are, perhaps. Maybe we have more bad experiences in this life and in the last life, so we're kind of more disgusted or something like this. Na nirvino nati sakto. So, okay, we're a little bit more over to the Gyan side, but that doesn't really matter that much in the eyes of God. Krishna wants to see how much love and, you know, how much does the devotee think of him, and how does he think of him, how much feeling does he think of him with, how much love, how much is he willing to sacrifice for him, like that. How much, when he calls his name, how much feeling does he call, is he calling completely helplessly like a baby? That is more important. That's why this verse says that the Sakam devotee can, you know, get the mercy of God. Of course, then very quickly he'll become Nishkam, and then he'll come to all these other levels. He can quickly surpass the, you know, the Nirapeksha Bhakta. Ambarish Maharaj is an example. Right? He was a king. But he didn't try to protect himself when Durvasa created that monster to attack him, a demon. He didn't pray for protection. He just depended on Krishna. Well, same point? Okay. And you have another question? All right, let's him, Chaitanya Chana will add his comment. Well, the kind of idea that Krishna is talking about is, he's saying, don't have material goals. You think of me. So, I would say it's not like material desires, just like, maybe like, well, Pundarik Vidyaniti is a kind of extreme example. But here's a person that, you know, he was dressing so, you know, gorgeously and opulently with perfumed oil hair and, you know, silk bed and so, you know, such opulence. But in his heart, he was like just so much prema was just coming from his heart. But you can say that he was very attached. I mean, why did he live like that? Anyway, but this is a kind of extreme example. I say, material desire and just some kind of common attachment. I'm kind of trying to find this idea of, you know, what is the person's goal? What is his meditation? In other words, like a grihastha, say again, we may use Jayadeva as an example. He's the only person I know in your congregation. So, you know, he maybe 10 years ago, he you know, had a lot of desires, and he started a family, and he started a business, and he was successful. Then he became a devotee. And he's got all of this attachments, you know. He's got his wife, he's got his daughter and son, and he wants his son to go through college, and he has all these responsibilities, and you could say they're attachments, because he's, right, he's attached to his wife and his children, because they're all devotees, but, so, in one sense, they're material. I mean, just say that his children were not devotees, say. But still there's some attachment there. But that attachment is minimal compared to his bhakti. But his bhakti is much, much, much stronger than that. So he's still like acting in the Sakam level, But inside his heart, there's this devotion. So in that sense, we're saying that material attachment and love for Krishna can coincide side by side. That because it's not, that, you know, they're very insignificant, but still there's something there. There's some mortal attachments. Run that past me again? Yeah, yeah.
But it not necessarily means when he's completely detached, he can be attached to Krishna.
Right, it doesn't necessarily mean that, because the Gyanis and Mayavadis are also detached. It doesn't mean they love Krishna. So some devotees may have developed detachment, but they haven't developed love for Krishna. Their detachment may be based on some other motives. Suffering, disgust, just knowledge, right? So gradually, just even Hemamba, because she became a devotee, she became detached from her jewelry. And she wanted to offer it to the brahmacharis so that Ramanujacharya would, she thought, you know, was that the ashram needed money. So she was, and then when she turned and didn't give the other, you know, turned around, they ran away. And then she was lamenting, oh, they didn't take the other jewelry. And her husband was chastising her. This was your false ego, because you think the jewelry belongs to you, that you're offering it to the Lord. You're such a, you know, a benevolent donator. Like this. And he chastised her. And this is a very subtle point, you know, talking about false ego. That's the difference between this, you know, Bhagavad Arpit Nishkam Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Is this idea of offering. If she was, you know, he was telling like I'm on such a level to his wife. If you were more surrendered, you would have just laid there and just let them pick it off you. But you were thinking that you were the doer. And that's why you tried to turn around and offer the jewels. And then, but look what happened. You chased them away, you foolish woman. And the brahmacharis were listening to this conversation. They thought, wow. Hare Baba, hey, you know, these grihasthas, they know so much more, you know, such on a high philosophical level. They're so detached. Only in the sense that I just described. This. Huh? But look, you know, it's like, it's very clear that, I mean, even Gajendra developed bhakti. Was he detached? Right? Mahaprabhu told his mother. You know, Dhruva got bhakti. Was he so detached? Or Murgari? Putana? So many examples he gave, right? In the Chaitanya Mangala. Vidura? Right? He didn't have a high caste. Putana wasn't very beautiful. Dhruva wasn't mature. Right? Gajendra, what did he have? He was an animal. Of course, when bhakti fills the heart, then it pushes out everything else. But the person may be situated in a situation, he may be situated in a kind of position where he's, you know, attached. And of course, gradually those attachments go away. But it doesn't happen in a second. It takes some time. But there has to be some sadhana. Like Arjuna is doing a sadhana on the battlefield. He's remembering Krishna while he fights in the war and kills people. That's his sadhana. You know. And in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that, you know, Vikriditam Rajivadubir Idangcha Vishnu. This shloka. It said, read Rogam Ashwa Pahino Achirena Dira. So first that para bhakti comes in the heart, and then later the disease of lust is destroyed. But the first thing that happens is bhakti comes. If there's a desire for bhakti, and you know, if the person is meditating in the on the Lord with some affection, then the bhakti will come. Even though there may be, there may be some material desire still there, and then the bhakti pushes out the material desires. That's the whole process. That's like we say, you fill the cup, right, with milk, and then gradually, all the ink is replaced. And then after some time, well, you only have milk left. So while you're pouring the milk, there's going to be some remnants of ink there. Just like everybody here, we have some of karma vasana, but we're doing bhakti. Is Krishna only going to be pleased with us when all of the ink is completely gone? Or is he sometimes pleased with us now if we do something with devotion? He's pleased with us now. It's not just Krishna saying, no, only when you're completely pure, otherwise I'm not interested, you know, go away. No, he's not like that. Because uttam bhakti can exist even on the kanishta level. And there's certainly desires there. But as long as those desires don't cover the bhakti, and they're not habitual, the person's like always begging the Lord for so many material things and always praying for protection and da-da-da-da-da, then Krishna accepts this as uttam bhakti. Occasionally there may be some desires coming for protection or for some facility or whatever. But Krishna appreciates the affection in which the devotee is coming to him in. Even he says the Karma Misha Bhaktas in Artha Jigyasu Artharti. He said, I also appreciate them. They're Udara Ivayate, Gyani Tvatvayma Mebatam. But the Gyani is special. Yeah, he's free from all desires, so Krishna likes that better. But he said, these people, I also accept them because they're coming to me with some affection. So I reciprocate with them. And in bhakti marg, we're following a pure devotee. We're in practicing, you know, the highest kind of bhakti. Our goal is clearly this, you know, established, and the path is clearly established. So, what to speak of us? So we may have some. We may not have everything all cleared out yet, but Krishna appreciates it, and that. And that, to the degree that we're offering our heart to him, then to that degree he appreciates us, maybe more than a person's more detached, but has less bhakti. It's just establishing bhakti as the most supreme and independent entity. It's not dependent on gyan. It's not dependent on renunciation or vairagya. Stryo vaishas tata shudras. Yeah? Chandalopi. Dvijashreshta, Hari Bhakti Parayana. That he's the highest Brahman. Even his chandala, if he's got some bhakti. So there's always going to be some ink left, some vasanas, but gradually that's cleared away. Krishna accepts the devotion, even though there may be something there. That's why this mud vyapashraya indicates that the Sakam Bhakta can also get the mercy of the Lord and come to him. But the person who's attached can also be selfless and sacrificial too. Why not? The sacrifice, the willingness to sacrifice, not dependent on the renunciation. You have to stretch it a little. Your vision is a little bit too kind of, you know, like Newtonian physics. Maybe because we're all engineers here or something, you know. It has to be. I mean, Oriental people generally understood they have a very broader, you know, philosophy is stretchable, you know, like this. The boundaries, like Buddha Yoga, it's like boing, it's like a rubber band. In chapter 2, it means nishkam karma, but here it means something different. In chapter 10, it means something different. It means bhava bhakti. So we have to understand this. Krishna is very flexible, and the philosophies go like this too. It's not that easy to capture it and just stamp it and put it in a little hole, you know. I mean, we can try. We try to do that as much as possible, but you know, ultimately, everything's not going to fit so neatly into our little boxes in our brain. And you cannot capture God and put Him in your fist like this. Now I've understood everything. Oops, where did it go? That's like it's gone. Okay. Tomorrow we will try to understand more.